Good morning, Santa Fe, and welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting live from the Santa Fe Baking Company on Cordova Road and streaming on the web at ksfr.org. And we are now also podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can listen to the program any time of day. You can also go to iTunes and punch in words Santa Fe Radio Cafe, and it'll come up there, too, and you can podcast it to your iTunes account. All of this is made possible by Dotfoil Computer Systems right here in Santa Fe on the web at dotfoil.com. Later on in the program, we're going to be talking to the Catholic priest and author John Deere, and his latest book is called Transfiguration. We'll be talking about that. Right now, I would like to welcome from Open Hands, Julian McRoberts and Suzanne Chambers. Welcome, ladies, to the Radio Cafe.
Hey, good morning. Thanks good for morning. Having us, Mary Charlotte.
Nice to have you here. Open Hands is an organization that probably people have heard about because they've gone to the thrift shop, but it does a whole lot more than that. What is Open Hands?
Oh, we get that all the time, where people think we're just a thrift store, but we're so much more. It's been around. Open Hands is now celebrating its 30th year in operation, and it's an organization that serves all kinds of members of the community, not just seniors. We also work with disabled. We work with people that are economically challenged or families that are in crisis. You name it, we're there to provide a service, especially also for caregivers, people that are kind of in our age range and demographic who have aging parents or facing difficult issues. We're able to work with them. We also provide adult day service care for elders and disabled.
Is that right? You have an elder daycare center?
Yes, we have a beautiful facility. It's a state-of-the-art facility. We offer services Monday through Friday, basically from 7:30 to 5, and also Saturday respite. But it's kind of also geared for the caregiver that needs a break, that needs to be able to run errands or maintain their job, so on and so forth.
And so they basically drop mom or dad off at the center?
They can. Or we also have transportation that we can arrange for them. We do have vans that go pick people up throughout the city.
So you are doing a whole lot of things. One of the things that I find fascinating is that you have a job shop that basically offers handyman services to people.
That is correct, and that is a brand-new program that we just started. It was kind of an offshoot. For years, what Open Hands has also been doing is offering home accessibility and repair to different people that in the community. And what that means is, like, for example, we've been building ramps for a number of different people that might require that, any type of accessibility issue. And we even won recently won an award based on our home repair services, and that was a national award that was sponsored by the National Association of Aging. So we're really excited about that because we were only one of 10 different programs that were recognized in the nation for this. And in any case, what's been happening, though, is a lot of people, based on our ramps and the other things that we've been providing, started asking for other repairs. And so now we can offer this to other Santa Fe residents.
Can you fix that light fixture on my ceiling that I can't get to because I'm 70 years old and I don't want to go up in the ladder?
Absolutely. We even had a lady, a really nice lady, that called yesterday, and she needed help with hanging some pictures. So we're getting calls for everything from leaky faucets to even building decks. And, again, what's really great is that this is offered to all Santa Fe residents.
Regardless of need, no.
Well, this particular, the job shop is very different from the home accessibility program. I mean, that is definitely based on need, and that will always take precedence over other, you know, work that we do. But, no, the job shop, it does not matter, you know, as to, you know, income eligibility or anything like that. You know, none whatsoever. But what's really great about this, and I think one reason why we've had such a great response, and we've only been doing this for a few weeks now, and the reception's been wonderful, but what's great is that all the proceeds go back into benefiting the programs of Open Hands, such as community outreach services and other things that we're doing.
We're talking to the folks from Open Hands. Now, there's there's all sorts of other things, too. The ADS program for economically challenged residents,
yes.
What is that about?
That's our ADS program, and it sets up individual accounts for members that are economically challenged. They have to be legal U.S. citizens, legal residents, and if they fit in a certain income demographic based on state and federal funding, they can participate in a program with a 4-to-1 match, which is incredible. So if they can save up to $1,000, we will provide a match of up to $4,000. And those funds can be used to help them start to purchase a home, go back to school, or start a business. And it's in conjunction with other partners in town and mentors. So we work with them. And the individuals are required to go through a 10-week financial literacy class once a week, one night a week for a few hours. And once they've graduated that class, they start their account. We set them up with mentors and help propel them on their way.
How's that going so far?
It's been great. We just finished our first class, the 10-week class of financial literacy, and we still have a bit of a wait list for the next round of classes. We are still looking for participants. There's still funding available, and we still have room. So anyone that wants to know more about that can give us a call at Open Hands and ask for Jackie. She handles the IDA program.
And we'll be giving the phone number in just a moment at the end of the program. What kind of things are covered in financial literacy?
Basically, just how to have good basic financial sense, how to set up a checking account, how to save a little every month, how to really budget and figure out where your funds are going every month, and just kind of look at your finances from a, that aspect of being responsible for them and planning ahead and for your future.
Do you find that a lot of people don't do that normally? I mean, one would think that people living on very limited income, that's the first thing you'd do.
And I think, a lot of people, I saw something recently on this on TV where people don't really save. There was a whole article on that because they just don't have it in their head to think about saving. They just have it the here and the now. But even if you're saving just the smallest amount, even $10 a month, over time does add up. So it's really kind of getting them geared up into that mode of thinking ahead and planning and figuring out where they can cut back on things that may not be as necessary for them.
So Open Hands also does have this thrift store. Is that something that has grown or changed? Is it something that's pretty solid? What do you have there?
It's been around for a while, and basically we serve the community, and we have all kinds of things from fun, funky items to clothing, furniture, you name it, we have it. And we still welcome the community to come in and shop there and get a good bargain or bring their donations as well.
Where is it at?
We're located over at 851 San Mateo, and it's actually, we did a rebranding last year. It's the 851 Exchange. So it is still open. Run by Open Hands.
And actually, I just went there the other day, and there was some very cool furniture at the time.
Yeah.
We're talking to the folks from Open Hands. How did each of you get involved in doing this kind of work?
It was just kind of a fluke for me. I knew some people at Open Hands, and recently they had mentioned this brand new program that they wanted to launch. And I was basically asked, if I was interested, told about the program, and I thought the Job Shop was just such a fantastic idea, especially for someone like myself. I'm a single woman, and I'm always needing things repaired. So, I think
have you made use of it yourself?
No, but I sure would like to. Yeah.
And I was one of those people that had the worker up on my very high ceilings changing the light bulbs yesterday. So
it's a wonderful program, and it serves, so many people. And another thing, too, in terms of Open Hands and some of the different things that we do in the community, I mean, it's just such a great program. And I had recently lost my mother last November. And I would have loved to have known about some of these services. We even have a medical loan bank. And what that means is that, let's say, a family in the community needs either a walker or a wheelchair or something of that nature. You can get that. There's no charge for the loan. And that's regardless of the family income. And that's
now, you actually loan the wheelchair, or you loan people the money to buy a wheelchair?
Loan the wheelchair. And it's just been... it's a fantastic program. Again, it doesn't matter the income. Anybody can do that. You can get it for a two-month period. So that's another great thing that Open Hands provides to the community. I think there's a lot of things that people, either they don't realize or a lot of people know about our accessibility program. And I'm told every day about, thank you for the ramps that you provided us and so forth. But that's just one more thing that we do.
What kind of donations are you looking for? Are you looking for things like wheelchairs and walkers?
Well, it's interesting that you ask that, because a lot of times people do want to donate that type of equipment to us, but unfortunately we're running out of storage capacity. And so that's something that would be just a huge help.
But we also always need financial donations. We serve over 12,000 residents in Santa Fe each year. And as you can imagine, with all these programs, it's a fairly big budget to have to fulfill. So we're always in need of financial donations to help all kinds of residents in the community.
What about volunteer time?
We do have volunteers that like to come in. Some like to read to the seniors. Some work on other projects. We have some that are working as mentors in the IDA program. But right now we're pretty well staffed with volunteers. But we also are looking for volunteers to help with our fundraiser coming up in September, which would be helpful as well.
What do you do for your fundraiser?
This is going to be kind of an unusual one that we're doing this year. We're going to have the O Awards and our charity fundraiser. We're going to be recognizing kind of the unsung heroes in our community, who basically really made quite a difference. And we'll be having a champagne brunch. You'll be at a beautiful private home. We'll have a silent auction, entertainment, door prizes. And it will be September, I believe, 23rd. And so we'll be posting that on our web with more information.
What is your website?
Our website is openhands.org.
That's easy enough. Any other things that you want to talk to our listeners about before we go?
You know, I just can't stress, Mary Charlotte, enough how wonderful of an organization this is. I'm fairly new with them as well.
How did you get into this work?
I've been in nonprofit for about 10 years, working as a business consultant, and I came out of animal welfare. And ironically enough, the executive director of Open Hands used to be one of the board members of an animal shelter I was with. So I just came in to help just on a temporary interim basis and found out that this organization is just so magnificent and just kind of very under the radar. So we really wanted to get the word out to let people know more about these incredible services. But I've been so touched by how many testimonials I've seen from people that just, it changes their lives. And there's such a great group of people over there. They're so caring. These are just special people that work in this industry.
If people are listening and they want to make use of the services, or they know somebody else who might want to, and they don't have a computer to go to the website, what number should they call?
They can call 428-2320. And again, if not, if they do have a web computer, they can go on to openhands.org.
And 428-2320.
Yes.
And
we do have a direct line to the job shop, and that's 428-2366. And if there's any questions regarding community outreach, you know, perhaps if they're economically disadvantaged and they want to know about some additional resources, they can call 428-2340.
And if you've missed any of those numbers, you can write to me at radiocafe@ksfr.org or leave a message at 428-1528. And contrary to popular belief, I do eventually answer all my phone calls. Julian McRoberts and Suzanne Chambers of Open Hands, thank you so much for being with us here on the Santa Fe Radio Cafe.
Oh, thank you for having us.
Thank you.
We're going to take a little break right now. When we come back, we'll be talking to John Deere. Stay tuned to KSFR.
Outpost Productions and Padmini continue their celebration of Padmini's 10th anniversary with a much-anticipated concert event featuring the legendary tabla virtuoso Zakir Hussain and India's greatest living santur player, Pandit Shiv Kumar Sharma. Tuesday, April 24th, 7 p.m. at the Lensic in Santa Fe. For info, call 268-0044 or visit outpostspace.org. This message sponsored by Outpost Productions, a tax-exempt organization.
KSFR programming is underwritten by Locals Care. Locals Care community cards reward you for shopping and dining at over 100 locally owned businesses. You can support a Santa Fe nonprofit and earn rewards for yourself at any Locals Care business. Find program information and a current list of participating businesses and nonprofits at locals-care.com. Offered in cooperation with the Santa Fe Alliance and sponsored by Century Bank, Los Alamos National Bank, the New Mexican, and the City of Santa Fe. Iraq, Bosnia, Chechnya. How is your understanding of war shaped by the images you see? What are the ethical dilemmas faced by the photographers? Join College of Santa Fe's Documentary Studies Chair, Tony O'Brien, as he probes for answers with Time Magazine photo editor Mary Ann Golan and Magnum photographer Thomas Vorjak in a discussion on the dangerous art of capturing war on film. Saturday, April 14th at 7 p.m. in the Forum. This message is sponsored by the College of Santa Fe, a tax-exempt organization.
I I'd like now to welcome John Deere. He's a Catholic priest. He's author of many books, the latest of which is Transfiguration, a meditation on transforming ourselves and our world. Welcome to the Radio Cafe. It's great to have you back.
Thanks, Mary Charlotte. Great to be here.
Let's talk about your new book for a bit. There's a lot of things, as always, going on in your life. Mm-hmm. Your book encourages people to follow in the footsteps of Jesus Christ and become his disciple. And I was wondering, I mean, what does this mean for you? What was the path that brought you to that type of discipleship?
Well, as I think I've told you before, for me, I'm a student of Martin Luther King and Mahatma Gandhi and Dorothy Day. And when I look at the world and the war in Iraq and nuclear weapons at Los Alamos and poverty and so much violence, I study all the great peacemakers and saints of the last century. They're always talking about nonviolence. And so for me, that's the critical new way to understand spiritual life and just surviving life in the world today, as well as following Jesus. So I look at Jesus as the epitome of nonviolence, but you could look at that within any religious tradition, your own, you know, in the nonviolence of Buddhism or Judaism and all so forth. But for me, I'm just continually studying and reflecting and meditating on the nonviolence of Jesus. And what does it mean to follow him in such a world today? Well, that means to become a person of active, creative nonviolence. And Doubleday asked me to write a book about, they had asked Tutu as well, and he started it, but he got sick, so then they asked me to write it, and he wrote the foreword. So I talk about, fundamentally, the book is a meditation about following Jesus, but that means becoming a person of nonviolence. And like Gandhi and Dr. King, in every aspect of our lives. And that's always been, you know, for me, as I said, the best way to understand the spiritual life in these times, you know. Can I become a person of nonviolence? And can I let my little light shine, like Jesus let his big light shine, to become a person of peace and nonviolence to New Mexico and the world? I think that's the challenge today.
Now, what is the image of transfiguration? There's of course, the transfiguration in Jesus' life. Tell us about that and what that metaphor means, that you chose that for your book.
Well, you know, as I said, the publisher, Doubleday, asked me to write this, and they said to me, well, everybody has a transfiguration. You get up in the morning, you have a cup of coffee, and you're transfigured. Or when you get married, you're transfigured. That's your... And that lasted for me about 5 minutes. And I'm not putting anybody down, but I don't want it to be a kind of... A liberal bourgeois theology or spirituality. And what I wrote shocked them and Archbishop Tutu. I'm saying that the transfiguration is about the cross and the resurrection. So the story goes, Jesus is doing all this good work and healing everybody and teaching the Sermon on the Mount. But then he stops and he starts talking about the cross and saying, I'm going to Jerusalem and I'm going to confront injustice in the temple. And the disciples are freaking out. Why would you do that? And then he goes up the mountain to have a day of prayer. And he's transfigured into white light. And Moses and Elijah appear. And they represent the law and the prophets. That's the whole Hebrew tradition right there in a nutshell. And in Luke's version, it says they're talking about the new Exodus, which he's to accomplish in Jerusalem. In other words, Moses and Elijah are encouraging Jesus to go down the mountain, go to Jerusalem, turn over the tables of injustice in the temple, undergo the cross if necessary, to let the chips fall where they may, to go into perfect nonviolence and then to be raised from the dead and show the human race a way out of slavery to death and war and violence. Well, that changes everything. In other words, if you're following Jesus, you have to make that journey, and we have to encourage one another to go the whole route into active, daring nonviolence that confronts injustice or war. And it's interesting in the story, the three disciples, Peter, James, and John, are sound asleep, which I write as though it's going to get me in trouble, but it's an image of the male-dominated church sleeping through the transfiguration of Jesus, you know? And then they wake up and they say...
Are the ladies paying attention?
They're not there.
Okay.
Only the men are there, according to the text. No, the women are faithful throughout the whole story. They're right there with Jesus to the end of it. These guys are like the Keystone Cops. I shouldn't talk this way about Peter, James. They're like the Three Stooges. They're sleeping through the Transfiguration. They sleep through Gethsemane. They protest everything Jesus wants to do, but the women are right there even at the cross, and they're the ones who Jesus appears to when he rises from the dead. The women, of course, are always the faithful ones. But then they wake up, Peter, and he says, it's a good thing we're here. Let's build three tents, and we've got this under control. In other words, they try to take charge of God and control God, and they want to have a nice private spirituality on the mountaintop. Let's stay here. But the scandal or the story to me is about going down the mountain. You know, having a moment on the mountain. We all need to have a mountaintop experience where we're really in touch with creation. And literally on a mountain, you have a sense of God and new life. And, you know, it's so refreshing. But you got to go down the mountain and confront the war in Iraq or Los Alamos or poverty or the death penalty or what issue you're struggling with. And that's what Jesus gets encouraged to do, whereas Peter is trying to stop that. And then the voice appears from the cloud and says, this is my beloved, listen to him. And they fall down like they're dead, Matthew's account. And it says Jesus touches them and says, rise and do not be afraid. It's a spectacular story, but it's so mysterious. And I spent 7 years meditating on this book and writing it. And I don't claim to, you know, and know almost anything about it, but it's really interesting, and this was my take on it, that if you look at it within this journey of nonviolence, and we are entering that journey of nonviolence in our own personal lives, well, then at some point we too will climb a mountain, and we too will or experience the revelation of God in our midst. Or we too might even become the light of peace and love and nonviolence to people around us. And we, too, have to encourage one another to go on the journey of nonviolent resistance to the culture of war. And that's what I think the Transfiguration is about. Much to the shock of my publisher and Archbishop Tutu, who, in the end,
well, what were
was
they
really
expecting?
Good. That I was going to say, you know,
every cup of coffee will transfigure you?
Every day is a beautiful day.
That's been said.
Well, I think the gospel is actually a lot more serious than that. The cross. Nobody talks about the cross anymore. Or even resurrection, and it's Easter season now. This is political, nonviolent resistance to empire. That's what the gospel is really about. In perfect nonviolence, Jesus never even gets angry, and even in the resurrection, he doesn't come back and punish us for not, you know, doing what he said. He comes back and he's still kind and peaceful and nonviolent, and he's still saying, look, folks, this is the way. You have to follow. I invite you to follow me on the way of nonviolence. So I was trying to get into the meat of the story, but I think it's helpful. I think we all have to grow up and become mature spiritual beings now, which means our spirituality has to deal with what our country is doing in Iraq or Los Alamos or global poverty, like Jesus did. We have to come off the mountain. And in all our love and peace and nonviolence, we have to stand up and do something about this. And that's what's so scary. We're just like the disciples, actually. We're sleeping through the presence of God. We're resisting God. We want to control God. We want to stay on the mountaintop and be happily ever after. And we don't want to get involved in the mess of standing up, you know?
We're talking to John Deere, and the new book is called Transfiguration, a meditation on transforming ourselves and our world. Yeah, the mountain imagery comes up throughout your book. But you also talk about, for example, going to a congregation in Rhode Island and talking about a sermon that you gave there about the very things that you're talking about now and basically being booed off the stage.
Yeah, that's happened a couple of times to me. And I was, in the book, I was trying to talk, what happened to Jesus before he went up to the mountain? You know, and the first time in Luke, the first time he opens his mouth, he goes home to the synagogue in Nazareth, and he opens the scroll of the prophet Isaiah and says, the Spirit of the Lord is upon me, and I've come to bring good news to the poor, liberation to the oppressed, release of prisoners. I mean, it's spectacular. And he says, now this is fulfilled. This is what I'm going to do. And they want to kill him. And they rush him to the edge of the cliff, and he gets away. Well, I was telling about how my friend Kathy Kelly, I think she was on your
who's
show.
Been on the program once, yeah.
She's a great hero who has led more delegations than anyone to Iraq. And she and I were speaking at a church on a cliff overlooking the Atlantic Ocean in Rhode Island. And it was packed. This was just a couple years ago after the war had started. And we were speaking about the war. And I got up and spoke very calmly about the Sermon on the Mount. Jesus says, love your enemies. So that means we can't kill the people of Iraq. And I talked about my trip to Iraq with Kathy and the Nobel Peace Prize winners. Then Kathy got up and gave a very serious, detailed description of what's happening in Iraq and why we need to stop this war. And then the whole place exploded. How dare you bring this politics into our church? And it was an upper-class, white, devout Catholic congregation, and they were furious with us. And they just shouted us down, and over and over and over again. And then finally this guy stood up and said, excuse me, these are very nice, naive little Christians here, but you know, they're like hobbits or something. But I was the press spokesman for Clinton at the Pentagon, and I can explain everybody. Can I have the microphone? And we said, go ahead. And he said, these are nice people, but you have to bomb and kill everybody in Iraq. And everybody went, oh, thank God, and everybody left. And Kathy and I were talking about this story from Jesus because we thought they were going to throw us off the cliff. That's why I mentioned it in the book. And we began to, it's again, entering the story of Jesus and really begin to undergo the political persecution that he underwent. Now, that's the spiritual life. Dorothy Day, the great founder of the Catholic Worker, said, the measure of your discipleship to the nonviolent Jesus is how much trouble you're in. Isn't that great?
Well, except that's not something that most people want to sign up for.
No, that's the whole thing.
But it's not everybody's calling.
Well, I'm not so sure about that, Mary Charlotte. This is what gets me in trouble. Because if this really is the story of Jesus, that in fact he turns and wrecks his nice, successful ministry in Galilee and goes on a Gandhian march into Jerusalem, right into the temple, turns over the tables, and they all run away, and the government arrests him and executes him, capital punishment for capital crime. And he's saying, you have to follow me and take up your cross. And the churches are saying, this is the fullest revelation of God in all of human history, the embodiment of nonviolence, which means resistance to the empire, then we have to do the same thing. And that's exactly what Peter, James, and John were objecting to on the mountaintop. They're like, oh, let's not go down and get
let's
involved.
Not get our hands dirty.
Yeah, let's be up here and we'll be very spiritual and we'll be with you and Moses and Elijah and we'll feel very holy and nice. And meanwhile, the world is going to hell. And I think that's the measure of your spirituality is how peaceful and nonviolent you are and how engaged you are in confronting and stopping war, poverty, nuclear weapons, global warming, and injustice. And all the great spiritual figures to my mind, and I mean Dorothy Day, Gandhi, King, the Dalai Lama, Mother Teresa, Thich Nhat Hanh, Tutu, in our own last 50 years, they are all people who are engaged in the world and suffered and were persecuted for it. And that's what we have to do. That's what I was saying in the book. What do you think of that, Mary Charlotte?
Well, I mean, it's great for people for whom that is, as I say, your calling, your path, your sense of what you want to do with your life. For a lot of people, it's not what they want to do with their lives. They want to take care of their kids. They want to be massage therapists. You know, they want to do something where they're not engaged on that level of going to jail. I don't want to go to jail.
Yeah, well, I don't want to go to jail either, though, by the way.
But you're willing to do it.
Well, I think everybody, I think it's a question that we all have to look at more and more. You know, where are we in the story of Jesus? And can we get a little bit more involved in grassroots peace and justice work? Whatever you're doing, you know, everyone can do a little bit more. Or at least be involved. Kathy Kelly, I remember she told me in Iraq, she always has one ordeal coming up. She's got one thing, and she does it one at a time. And when I begin the book by talking about when I was 21 and I went to see Daniel Berrigan, the great Jesuit peacemaker, and I said, Dan, what's this all about again? I wanted to ask him the meaning of life, but I didn't know how to ask it. And instead
sounds like the beginning of a joke.
Yeah. Instead of laughing, though, he took me very seriously. And you know what he said to me was, all you have to do, John, is make your story fit into the story of Jesus. Or say, does your life, make sense in light of the gospel story. Well, I find that very exciting way to look for Christians and everybody. You know, if it's true, as I'm saying, that the story of Jesus is a journey of active nonviolence, well, then how do we fit our story into that great story? That's beautiful, and it's also liberating, because you say we don't have to do everything. But on the other hand, are we involved in the story? Does our story reflect the life of the nonviolent, troublemaking, illegal Jesus?
We're talking to John Deere, and his new book is called Transfiguration, A Meditation on Transforming Ourselves and Our World. Liberation is a word that comes up, freedom. And when you think about the ways in which Jesus was free, I think it's worth talking about. When a person is free, they may be free on the inside, they may be free on the outside. What does freedom mean to you? How do you see Jesus' freedom?
Wow, that's very interesting. Jesus was so free. He was free of money, possessions, shopping, going to the mall. He was free of fear. He didn't let fear control him. And he was free of violence. He didn't have a trace of violence. And he was so free that he would even confront systemic injustice in Jerusalem and let the chips fall where they may. Even as he said, you know, I choose to lay down my life for humanity, in love for humanity. And he was so free in trusting in the God of peace that he was willing to risk resurrection. Now, I don't think we want resurrection. I don't think we want transfiguration. I don't think we actually want that much hope. We are not that free. We are quite comfortable with our despair and our fear and our possessions, and we want to just kind of go along the next 20 years with our day-to-day and not get involved. Jesus was, I don't know. I mean, he was just a freedom beyond all our kind of freedom.
Well, how do you yourself
really non-violent thing
achieve that kind of freedom? Do you find that you're free from fear? Do you find that you're frightened at times?
Oh, yeah. And so I'm not claiming that I am. I'm trying to talk about Jesus, and then I put the question to myself.
No, I know. But then we put that question to ourselves. I mean, to be a leader of that caliber is not necessarily within our grasp if we are full of fear and despair.
You have to just work at this every day.
Right, and that's what I'm asking. How do you do that?
Through meditation and contemplative nonviolence. You have to have a daily practice every day of silence and solitude and peace, to be with the God of peace, to look deeply at your inner violence and your anger, your hurts, whatever your pain is, and to give that to God and to continually allow yourself to be disarmed, your heart to be disarmed. And then just to always be reflecting on the choices you make and the way you're living and what you're doing with friends. And it's good to have a community. And as I've talked before in the past about Pax Christi in New Mexico or other peace groups, you know, we try to get together and talk about these things. I talk about it with a lot of friends and the Jesuits and all. And in other words, to reflect. And then I find that you have to also act. Like, you know, we think here in the United States that we can think our way into a new way of acting. But the rest of the world, certainly in Latin America, and I know this from friends when I was living there, they were saying you have to act your way into a new way of thinking. If you want to be free and you want to offer a gift of peace and justice in the world, you can't wait till you're ready. You kind of have to take the leap of faith.
Go into the street now.
Yeah. And then you can reflect on it, and then you kind of receive the grace of freedom. It's a strange thing. But that's the way I see the life of Jesus, as well as Gandhi and King. And that's been my own personal experience. That's what I'm dealing with at the moment, as tomorrow, you know, the group that last September, we went and we protested at the federal building in Santa Fe, and now we're finally...
What were you protesting?
We're finally facing trial, and it's going to be quite an adventure. Well, we were part of the Declaration of Peace, which is a group I was part of from the beginning, and we called last September 25th and 26th for nonviolent witnesses in every congressional district in the country against the war in Iraq, asking people to go and see their congressional representative and say, please sign this statement saying you're going to work to end the war. Well, remember in September, there was no change whatsoever in the country. By and large, 70% of the country supported the war. And in 2 months by the election, it changed. And I think our campaign had a major national impact, and it's gotten no press coverage. There were 375 small civil disobedience actions in every congressional district in the country. That's exciting. Nine of us went into, you know, at the post office off the plaza in Santa Fe on September 26th, and we brought our letter, and we said, we're here to see Senator Pete Domenici on the third floor, and we want to get him to sign the statement saying he's going to work to end the war in Iraq. Of course, he's one of the biggest architects and supporters of the war. And as I joke, we got as far as the elevator, and the cops pulled the plug on the elevator, and we said, well, we're just going to see our senator. We haven't even done anything. And they said, well, you can't. But we're not going to arrest you. And one of them was saying, we're so glad you're here. We really support what you're trying to do. Anyway, that was about 10:30 in the morning, so we just sat in the elevator. And first, nearly.
What do you mean they unplugged the elevator? They made it so.
They put in a key, and so the door was open.
It
wouldn't go up. And it was opening to the whole foyer of the federal building right next to the post office there. And we stayed there till 5 o'clock in the elevator with the SWAT team. And by the way.
So you got arrested for sitting in the elevator?
Ridiculous. And
is that what you got arrested for?
Yeah.
Sitting in the elevator.
Well, the actual charge is a federal misdemeanor, failure to conform to signs and directions. I don't even know what that means. And so, by the way, every police officer in Santa Fe County was there for the whole day. I know that because the head of Homeland Security told me that. There were no police on the streets because guarding us. So at 5 o'clock, the head of Homeland Security came.
You should work with the burglars because that would be a great day for them to go wild.
Yeah. Well, it's amazing. And it was all, you know. I'm speechless.
So you were arrested, and now you're going to trial for sitting in the elevator.
They actually never, they're supposed to, as far as my experience is and my take on it, and everybody's got a different take in the group, but mine is the cops should have come up and said, unless you leave in a minute, we're going to arrest you. But the head of Homeland Security came up to give us the warning. I launched into a big speech and said, we're here to stop this evil war in Iraq. It's immoral. It's unjust. We're citizens trying to... And the guy got so flustered, he walked away. And then he came back and said, okay, we're going to put handcuffs on you and arrest you, or we're just going to give you a citation. And we said, well, we'll just, you know, there's no difference. We're both going to court, right? Yeah. So we'll take the citation. And, but it's such a waste of money. But the federal government... Judge Magistrate Svet and the prosecutors and the U.S. District Attorney are going full steam after us, and they're having a full trial with nine of us. There's, in the end, going to be seven of us. And
you're having a full-on federal trial,
right,
for not following
signs and
directions.
And we're going to, you know, try to talk about the war in Iraq, and we'll probably be found guilty. And, you know, I have a, you know, people, I don't think anyone else in the group had been arrested before, but I have a long history. So I'm expecting to do 30 days in jail, like 99% chance. I mean, he has to if he follows the federal guidelines. But in terms of the book, again, I'm just trying to get my life to be in part of the story of Jesus. And the thing that I can tell you is that this is very hard. It's messy. I'm scared. I don't want to go to jail. Oh, my God, it's so hard talking about this with lawyers and the legalities of it. And this is why nobody does it. Your life is disrupted. On the other hand, it's a great grace, and it's a great blessing. And I feel like I really am in solidarity with the people of Iraq, that I'm trying to do what I can here in New Mexico. And my hope and prayer is that everyone can at least write and call Domenici and your government leaders here in New Mexico and say, we want this war ended now. We want the troops home. We want massive reparations for Iraq. We want a nonviolent solution. And while we're at it, dismantle all the nuclear weapons at Los Alamos and Kirkland and Sandia. No death penalty. We want all that money for schools and houses and health care and jobs for our own people and then for the whole world. This is the thing that we can all be saying those kind of things. What do you think?
We're talking to John Deere, Catholic priest, author of the book Transfiguration, a meditation on transforming ourselves and our world. Well, okay, so 2,000 years ago, Jesus Christ walked the earth and did his thing, and many other Christ-like figures every century of human history have walked the earth and done their thing and been similarly saintly. Christ got perhaps more publicity than the rest for various historical reasons. And in all of that time, there have always been followers and there have always been people in power who didn't listen to them. And we're living in another one of those times. And it seems that history repeats itself over and over. And what makes you think that the people in power now would listen any more than they ever have through the rest of history? Because it's they who've got to take the bombs away.
Well, I guess I would say two things. One is in terms of the world. Mary Charlotte, the world is really on the brink. This is a terrible moment in history. And I was just reading something from Alice Walker yesterday. She's saying there is so much work to do. Everybody's got to be involved. And it's actually very exciting. But, you know, millions of people are dying from starvation and war around the planet. And Bush and Cheney and the whole structure of the United States now really could care less about the earth, the animals, people. You know, we're like run by sociopaths who could just have no feeling, no concern about the feelings and suffering of fellow human beings in Iraq or elsewhere. So we all have to get involved, I think, whether we like it or not, for the planet, for the human race, for the creatures, for the air and the oceans, to begin to, like the abolitionists of old, pursue a vision of a new world without war and poverty and nuclear weapons, a new world of nonviolence, that we need to heed the lessons of these great figures I was speaking about from Gandhi and King and Dorothy Day, of nonviolence, and say, well, how can we create nonviolent families? How can I be nonviolent to myself? This is what I said to Governor Richardson. Let's create a new nonviolent New Mexico, a land of nonviolence that is a light of peace to the world. That didn't go over too well, but you say. But the other thought I just want to say is, so we all have to be a part of the global thing. But, you know, I'm not giving up all hope that we're not going to make a difference. I think we can make a difference, and these movements have worked. And there was the abolition of slavery, and women got the right to vote, and the Soviet Union collapsed, and communism ended, and the Berlin Wall fell, and Mandela was released, and apartheid ended. I mean, Marcos fled. All of that happened nonviolently. I think we really can abolish nuclear weapons, and if enough of us make a stink, we can end the war. But even all of that, whether we make a difference or not, this is where you get into faith and spirituality, I think, where we're going to say, I don't understand this. We have to go through what Peter went through. But I will follow you, Jesus, all the way to the cross. And I'm going to go deep into nonviolence. And I'm going to trust the God of peace, that this is the way we're all called to be and to do our little bit. And that God will give us the gift of peace. And so it's about, that's why I keep coming back to the story in our own life. What do you want to do with the short amount of time you have on earth? That was always a big question for me when I was a kid. You know, like, it doesn't seem like anyone doesn't die. Even Jesus, you know, or Gandhi and King got killed. You're going to die. Now, do you want to die being apathetic and despairing, or even being part of the culture of war, or even carrying weapons and having guns? Or do you want to die offering the world a life of nonviolence and trying to make a difference and giving that kind of example and sowing seeds of hope and peace? And I hope more and more of us will struggle to try to choose that life, to live that life, whether we make a difference or not. In the end, the question of effectiveness and results is a very deep spiritual one, that it really the outcome is not in our hands. We're not going to think like the Pentagon. And even numbers in terms of the peace movement is not it either. We're talking about faithful to the journey of active nonviolence and trusting it and living an alternative life for the rest of our life. From this day forward, we're going to be people of nonviolence and love and compassion. And Jesus is so generous. You know, if it were me, I would be saying, hey, I'm the light of the world. He says, actually in Matthew, you are the light of the world. You really are going to be a light into a culture of darkness. That's very hopeful and exciting. And it's way beyond the question of effectiveness. We can make a big difference. And we just have to join hands and choose hope and get up and stand up and get involved. And I'm saying
yes,
it works.
And not everybody wants to be involved in a movement that they perceive as ineffective. Uh-huh. I remember going to a candlelight vigil a couple of years ago in front of the roundhouse. It had something to do with the war in Iraq. And I have to say, and I'm very sorry to any of the listeners who were there, it was the most pathetic display I've ever been to in my life.
So the thing is, if you feel that when you go to a peace event, yeah, you can go. And I've been through lots of events like that. I felt, oh, this was so awful. It's a setback. But then you have to get involved. You got to go to the organizing meetings and say, folks, we got to be more professional. We got to organize better. We got to make this exciting. But the thing, and we're all making mistakes because we're going to have to do this on our own. But the thing to keep in mind is that we are making a difference. I mean, the election was certainly a surprise, I think, and the majority of the country is against the war in Iraq, and it's given a lot of hope to people around the world. I just spent a month speaking in Australia, and people know what we're doing over there, and I think we can end this war. The Declaration of Peace certainly made a huge difference, and the marches around the country and in D.C. on the 4th anniversary were really important. We just have to keep at it. And likewise, the same with nuclear weapons and abolishing starvation. If we keep at this, we can make a difference. But you got to get involved and make these vigils and marches better and more exciting, that are more inviting to people. But I hope people won't be discouraged. Actually, I don't think we can afford the luxury of being discouraged or despairing or apathetic. It's the world is in too great of crisis, so everybody has to do something, I think.
We're talking to John Deere. It's interesting, when you said, you went to Richardson and said, let's make this a nonviolent New Mexico. The violence in New Mexico is not only on the part of, let's say, Los Alamos and the nuclear weapons manufacturer. It's on the part of people. It's on the part of people who have nothing to do with government or police or any of that. And anybody who's ever suffered violent assault knows that on a very visceral level. What are the proper uses, if any, of violence and weapons, do you think?
Well, I don't think there are any.
So if somebody's attacking me, I shouldn't call the police, or there shouldn't be any police?
No, what I think, it's not, nonviolence is not passivity. It's not doing nothing. And that's what the world says in the face of violence.
So someone's attacking you, what do you do?
If you start fighting back or you pull out a gun, first of all, you shouldn't have a gun, but that to me means it's probably not going to work. You're going to get beat up or killed. So nonviolence is infinitely creative, and it means engaging the person, disarming the person, looking them in the eye, saying, don't do this, or leaving or whatever, or talking to the police. But we have to be...
Well, should there be police?
Well,
I mean, this is,
we have to train ourselves to how to practice nonviolence. That's why we're doing more and more nonviolence trainings here in New Mexico. We have to teach each other these skills and methodologies and to think this through so that when that happens...
It sounds terribly naive. There are drug problems. There are people doing crystal meth. There are people who you look them in the eye and there's nothing there because they're addicts. That stuff doesn't work. It works with people like you and me, but it doesn't work with people who are that far gone.
Well, I'm not even saying it works with me. I mean, this is hard stuff. But that's why the whole state and nation and world needs to change its mindset. All the billions and hundreds of billions going into war should, first of all, we could feed the world tomorrow, and one day with that infinite money left over, we have to educate the entire planet in nonviolence and create new nonviolent institutions and nonviolent peace forces and nonviolent police teams.
So you can engage the mafia.
Massive rehab centers all over the country and teach people to be nonviolent,
right.
So there's no more suicide, nonviolence with children, no more domestic violence. Every area of life has to now become nonviolent. This is an entire transformation of the world. And this is the way King and Gandhi talk. And I know everybody says, well, that's totally ridiculous. Actually, they then said, it's our only hope.
Yeah.
And this is also the spiritual life. This is what Jesus was saying, too. But that's why I say everyone can do something. Whether you're a doctor, a lawyer, a vet, a massage therapist, you're teaching nonviolence, you're practicing nonviolence, you're healing people, helping people to move from their inner violence to inner nonviolence and becoming a light of peace to their people around them. But we also have to get our government leaders to disarm the structures and institutions and really, really begin the healing of New Mexico. And it's a long haul. We're talking 100 years, hundreds of years' work. But like the abolitionists of old who came in and said, we're announcing the end of slavery, we're announcing the end of war and violence, and everybody laughs, but it's going to happen. We are going to make this happen because this is the will of God. And this is what's really exciting to be a part of, to really disarm people and heal people and even the culture. And tomorrow night, by the way, I'm going to be at Collected Works Bookstore talking about my book right there on the plaza at 7 o'clock. And I hope everybody will come and buy multiple copies, and we can hash it out nonviolently about all these great questions.
Collected Works Bookstore tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. John Deere, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Mary Shaw. It's great. And thanks for all you do for peace.
The book is called Transfiguration, A Meditation on Transforming Ourselves and Our World, with a foreword by Archbishop Desmond Tutu. And the book is published by Doubleday in New York. John Deere has been on this program many times before, and we hope you will be back many times again.
Thanks, if I'm not in jail.
If you're not in jail. Well, you'll get out. I mean, it's only just sitting in an elevator that does not carry a life sentence. You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We are streaming on the web at ksfr.org. You can reach me at radiocafe@ksfr.org or leave a message at 428-1528. We are also now podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, thanks to .foil Computer Services of Santa Fe on the web at .foil.com. And you can also go to iTunes, and there's a whole little iTunes podcast. You can subscribe to the show on a daily basis. Thanks to Laurel Reynolds and Dal Dearman for engineering today. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team. And after that, Good Morning Jazz with John Greenspan. Features a guest appearance by local star Ron Hellman. And for Giants of Jazz, this afternoon, get your dancing shoes on for the big bands of Claude Thornhill and Charlie Barnett. Broadcasting live from the Santa Fe Bacon Company, my name is Mary Charlotte. We will see you tomorrow. Ciao.